I'm Lee Foster. You're listening to Action, the No Bullshit podcast dedicated to the pursuit of acting excellence. Enjoy this episode. Michael Kostroff, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
It's always a pleasure. You have the best podcast. I just want to say that while we're recording. I love it.
Thank you. So this episode, I want to talk about basically everything that doesn't have to do directly with like the craft and skill of acting and auditioning. It's everything that doesn't have to do with that.
Oh, great.
Right before we started recording, you were about to tell me something. Let's just jump right into that because I think it's super important.
Oh, so, you know, I ruminate on this business all the time. I think partially because I teach the audition process and I coach people and I think about it all the time. And I've been on a number of Facebook message boards and I've noticed that we have to be very careful who we take advice from. When you're first starting out, you want to take any and all advice and you assume that everybody knows better than you. But what I've noticed is that complete amateurs with no experience love to give advice. There was a guy, I didn't tell you this before we recorded, I wanted to save it. There was a kid came on one of these message boards and said, oh, I have my first musical theater audition. I don't know what voice type I am. I don't know what to sing. And the more experienced people gave him great advice, which was this. Pick something that sounds like the style of the show and fits your character that you know that you feel comfortable singing. That's exactly what you should do. This one guy comes on and goes, just sing the Star Spangled Banner. That's what I do. It always worked for me. And I'm like, this is very bad advice. Mm-hmm. It's a notoriously difficult song. It's not from musical theater. And he said, well, then how come I book all the time? I'm like, you're clearly a fantastic singer. I got it. You're like the best singer ever. Good for you. But it's not good advice. It might work for you. It's not good advice. I was teaching this last weekend in Vancouver. And there was a girl who said, I'm just starting out. What do I do? And again, some people with experience gave her advice. And then this one guy stands up. He goes, well, I'm not an actor, but here's what you need to do.
Right.
You know, so I think you got to be savvy from the start. From your first day in the business, you got to be savvy. Not only because there are ripoffs, but also because people just love to spout off, you know? So check people's credits. Honestly, that may sound a little crass, but check their credits.
I always say when it comes to this topic, you wouldn't go and get your car fixed from somebody who's driving like a beater down the street. It wouldn't make any sense. It would, by definition, be the wrong person to go to. And so if you're getting advice from someone who does not have the credentials, it might even be more wise to do exactly what exact opposite of what they're saying, because what they're thinking is
it's not working. But where's the humility?
Right.
You know, to know that what you don't know. I mean, listen, I've got this nice, healthy, long resume. I often tell people, you know, it's not my area of expertise. Like somebody wrote to me to help them find a monologue. I'm like, it's not my area of expertise. I'm not really great at that, you know? And I think you should have some humility and know what you know and what you don't know.
Exactly. I was actually interviewed for the first time on another actor's podcast in Chicago. His name's Tony Rossi. And I started by saying, there are very few things that I know. I'm only going to talk about the things that I know.
Right.
And a big reason that I started this podcast in the first place was when I was trying to get all this information, when I first started, I downloaded all the acting podcasts and I started listening to them. And what I quickly realized is that a lot of people had just given themselves a platform
Yes.
to play expert, but they didn't have anything to back it up.
Yes. It's rampant. And you know, you don't see it in other professions. The guy with the beat up car is probably not going to, he's going to, hey, look at my car. Why are you asking me? But, you know, actors who've been in the business 5 minutes will give themselves a podcast and start advising everybody. And it's really, I mean, it's not only is it inappropriate, it's also potentially, I don't want to say harmful. That's too strong a word, but you know what I mean? Like they're giving out bad advice and they don't know it.
Right. It's damaging. It is damaging to the people that you're telling. And you know what? I think it's also, it's sad for them in a way. It's sad for the people who think they know.
It is.
Because they don't know.
I just always say, have some humility. You know, somebody once asked me what's the most important quality for an actor. And I said, humility. Like knowing you can always learn more. You know, there's always going to be somebody better than you. Your humility is important because it keeps you open.
Right.
But this guy was, you know, he got into it with me. I mean, not ugly, but, you know, on this thread, he was like, you shouldn't be so negative. And I'm like, I've been doing this a really long time and I'm a professional musical. I said, ask 100 professional musical theater people. They will give you the answer that I'm giving. I said, and I don't know why maybe you're doing community theater. He goes, no, I do, I'm a big deal. And I'm like, okay, great. Congratulations. You're amazing. But we got to give good advice here.
Right. Well, this brings up another point. We're talking about people who don't have humility in this business. And this brings me to a question that I wanted to ask you, where inevitably you run into this. I run into this a lot, where people are very unsatisfied with their acting careers, and they complain and complain and they complain about them not having these successes. And they often blame it on other factors, right? So right. Inevitably it's the market, it's their agent, the casting directors, their whatever it is, right? What you almost never hear is somebody going, maybe I'm just not as good as I think I am. Maybe I just need to get back into class. Maybe I need some more training. Do you deal with that? Do you have people who come and maybe they envy your career and they just want to like gripe to you about it?
This is like a multi-part question. It really is. Yes, people gripe about the profession. I don't have a lot of tolerance for that because, as I always say, this is the profession we joined and it's always been this way. It's not going to change. It's, leopards have spots and show business is unfair and inconsistent and unreliable and you can't make a living at it. I think I get more concerned for people who are just eating themselves up alive with frustration and disappointment and sense of betrayal about something that is and always has been the nature of our business. I'm a great believer in embracing it. I just got the disappointing news about a part that I wanted. It didn't happen. And that is how it is. The other side of your question, though, is I really caution people against using their booking rate as a measure of their talent. There's no correlation like that exists. There are brilliant actors who don't work and lousy actors who do. And I would be concerned that somebody would say, well, I'm not booking anything. I guess I don't have the gift or the calling or I suck. It's a tricky one because I do think, God, you've asked me a very complicated question and I appreciate it. On the one hand, I do think we have to assess very honestly and we have to keep checking where we're at and be frank with ourselves because you don't want to spend your whole life in something you really don't have any ability at. But I don't think you can judge that ability based on whether you get jobs. Did I address your question? Sort of.
Absolutely. You said that you don't have a lot of patience for people complaining about it. What is it that you do? How do you handle it?
It depends how close that you are. If I don't know them well, I'll just say, oh yeah, that's too bad. It's not my place to go around teaching everybody. But I've said to some close personal friends that your problem is you think that you're entitled to something and none of us are. We're not entitled to anything. Get a day job and that's just how it is. I have a brilliant director friend, Sue Hamilton, and she teaches acting and she has a motto for everything. And she says, have fun or get out. And I feel like with as hard as it is to be financially successful or gain notoriety as an actor, you really have to have fun or get out. And I think you have to have fun with the whole thing, not just the working, embrace the weirdness of it and all the craziness of it. I think you have to. Otherwise, I feel like being mentally healthy and balanced and happy should be a focus that's on our list of things to focus on. Because if being in the business makes you miserable, life's really too short. And I'm going to say something that some listeners are not going to like now. You shouldn't discount the option of being a non-professional actor. There are a lot of people who just love doing it and they do community theater and they do, student films and they do whatever, but they don't rely on it for a living. They're not trying to pursue, the brass ring. And I think that's a very healthy place to be also. You gotta enjoy your life. Oh God, you always turn me into Gandhi. You get all philosophical. But yeah, I guess what I say to those people is if I know them well, I'm like, oh, you made the mistake of thinking you were entitled to something.
It is sad. It's sad seeing someone who's just, who's miserable. You just want to go, man, just leave it. It's okay. It's not worth it. It's not worth it for you to just be miserable every day for years and years and years.
It's not worth it. And the thing is, I think what we have to note is that, it's healthy sometimes to bitch and complain and vent, but it doesn't have a practical value. Like it doesn't change things. Like the business will not change because you find it unfair. It will continue to be that way. I hope that doesn't sound harsh. I'm a big fan of logic and reality. The reality is this is how it's going to be, like I'm well aware. And I don't say this to be humble. This is the reality. There are much, much better actors that don't have the career I have. that because it doesn't line up in a way that's fair or logical. You know, that's just how it is. They're much better actors. I watch a lot of actors and I think, I don't even know how to do what you do, you know? So yeah, I hate to see people be miserable. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Okay. So we are going to get into some specific, we're going to take a hard left turn, get into some specific questions.
I'm ready.
These are just a list of things that I've wondered about that don't fit into any of our earlier conversations, really. And like I said, not really going to have much to do with the skill or craft of acting or auditioning. What forms of representation do you have? Agent, manager, publicist, so on?
I have an agent. It's a bicoastal agency for theater and film and television. I have a New York commercial agent. And I have a bi-coastal manager. I'm not always a big advocate of having a manager. I'm not always sure why I do. I just like them and they're get good advisors and good support, you know. So I choose to stay with them. I never know how to answer the question about whether one should have a manager. And that's it. That's all I have. No publicists. They're really, really expensive. And I don't think anybody should have one until they are really at a level where you're like a series regular or, you know, starring in a major film. It's just not worth it otherwise.
Last night, I released an episode with a manager based in Atlanta who was an agent, formerly an agent, now a manager. Learned a lot, never had an in-depth conversation with a manager before. I learned a lot, very interesting. Can you just explain what it's like to have a manager, what your relationship is like with your manager as opposed to your agent, like what kind of conversations you guys are having about projects and whatnot?
It's interesting because I've had several managers and several agents and the relationships have been a little bit different, but the way I think about it is, frankly, I don't have to hide with my manager. If I'm going through a depression or I'm freaking out over something I know I shouldn't freak out over, or I'm mad about not getting a part or any of the sort of not for publication feelings that I have, you know, I can talk to them about that. You know, I can call them and say, it just feels so quiet. I just need to talk to somebody who's in the business to know that I still exist. You know, all that weird neurotic stuff, I can deal with that. Also, here's another topic. I feel like my agents are great and I love them. I think they are not really, really enthusiastic about me doing theater because they make more money when I do TV and film. So I can get my managers to sort of focus on that for me, which they do. And also in terms of advice, like, you know, my manager here who knows all the theaters, he's like, no, that one's not worth doing. That one is worth doing. You should definitely do this one. You know, he thinks about all the factors. He's like, okay, you have a lot of musicals on your resume. So even though this would be like low paying Shakespeare, you should do it if you get offered it, that kind of thing. Mm. So that's the difference. But it's different every time with every relationship because my relationship with my agent here is so amazing that I could actually call her and say, I'm bored. What are you doing? You know, and we'll bitch about politics for an hour. Or, you know, I mean, she's great. She'll mock me for wanting to go do Death of a Salesman for $1.50. You know, so this particular agent I have a sort of a closer relationship with.
Does your manager know what your ultimate career goals are?
Yeah. Yeah, they're really good on that.
Can I ask what those are? Yeah.
Well, a big bucket list thing right now is that I do not have a New York theater career. I've been back here 8 years. I still don't have a New York theater career. And that's the next thing for me. I mean, I really, not just Broadway, but, you know, Off-Broadway has some really interesting, low-paying, but really great theater that I would like to do. That's it. So my next level is that, another series regular. I don't get seen for series regulars very much. I'd like to do that. And film roles. I don't do a lot of film. So these are areas that I really need to expand in.
I have two questions and I need to say them before I forget them. The first one is going to be, I want to ask you about this project that you were telling me about that you have.
Right.
And the other thing is I want to ask you about the difference between film and TV because I'm in Chicago. Not a lot of films come through here. It's almost all television. There have been a number of films, but it's rare. Since I've been here for 6 years, I've seen a few, but one of my mentors and a guest on this show many times, Ron Marasco, when I had this most recent co-star, I sent him the clip, he saw it, and he said, make sure your agents see this and make sure they start submitting you for film. And I was kind of like, huh, okay, I don't quite know. It just kind of, I didn't quite understand that. And I just assume there's something that I don't know. So can you just talk to me about why is it that you don't think you're getting seen for film as much as TV?
Again, you know, I told you when I don't have expertise, I tell you, I only have a guess. I just think it's a little bit of a different room in the house. You know, it's a little bit of a different group. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why I don't have a lot of film, but I do think it's different. Like, for example, I would no longer do like 1, 2, 3 lines on television, but I would do 1, 2, 3 lines on a film because I don't have as many credits, and getting my face up there is really good for me, for people to go, oh yeah, that guy, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know any other differences. It just seems like it's a different group or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. They're slightly separated. Okay.
I mean, it certainly isn't a different acting style or a different process to me anyway. You know, I had a little role in Molly's Game, and that was great. People noticed it. They saw it.
That was so good. I watched that like a bunch of times.
Film?
No, your part. I mean, that film
really?
Film was really good. And I'm not trying to kiss your ass at all, but like the way that you were such a little like sneak, and with the coffee, like you did this thing where I think it cuts when you like, you take a sip of your coffee in one of your scenes.
I don't remember that, but okay. Yeah.
It was just, it was like so spot on. Yeah, no, it was really good.
Thank you. I'll take it. I feel like whenever I do an Aaron Sorkin thing, I feel extra obliged to make the behavior really, really real. He's just the way he writes and the way he casts, and he really likes a level of reality that I appreciate.
Yeah, it was so good. I always think when I'm watching TV or film, especially when somebody has like a small part where they have maybe one scene, I always think of the audition. I picture the audition.
Good.
That would have been the audition, right?
Right.
I imagine that person walking in and going into the room in front of 3 or 4 people and doing exactly that. And I'm like, that is such a fucking good audition.
I know we said we weren't going to talk about auditions today, but now that we're on the subject, you can cut this out and put it in another episode. I don't care. But I've been teaching a class lately on 5 and unders. I don't know if we talked about this last time, because the 5 and under auditions are so bloody hard. And since I've been doing that, I've been noticing those performances on TV where it's like, wow, it didn't even occur to me that person wasn't a nurse. Mm-hmm. That's the art of that, which is a whole other thing. It's super hard. But anyway, yes. Okay. Non-acting, non-audition questions. What else?
So tell me about this project that you
booked. Oh, okay. So I'm doing another project for HBO and David Simon. It's based on a book by Philip Roth called The Plot Against America. It's fucking terrifying. It's an alternate reality, like Man in the High Castle, the what if, you know, and it takes place in the 40s, a Jewish neighborhood. And it's if Lindbergh had won the presidency, and Lindbergh was a Nazi sympathizer and, you know, a racist and all kinds of things. So it just, the whole country quietly changes. And he wrote it in 2004, and there are so many similarities to what's going on with us now. Mm. So I'm really excited about doing it. They booked me from April through September, which is, as you know, an incredible luxury in our business to go, oh, I know what I'm doing for several months. I still can't believe that. I keep looking like, do I need to be looking for jobs? I'm like, no, you have one. You have one for that whole time, which is amazing. And I have to add that maybe the best news of all of this is I am not a lawyer and I'm not in a suit. And David Simon, I've now done 3-4 things for him. It was relayed to me that he was like, yeah, we've got a lot of typical Michael parts, but you know what? Why don't we give him something different? I was like, thank God.
Can I ask what it is?
I am playing a guy who runs a movie theater. It's the movie theater that just shows newsreels. He's really aware of what's happening politically, and he's more reflective and quiet. And I had my costume fitting yesterday, not a single suit, you know? I often talk to young actors who are like, well, I don't want to get typecast. I'm like, go ahead and get typecast. If you get typecast, you're working. And let the time to expand come later.
Right.
You know?
Right. So you said they booked you from April through September.
Yeah.
Meaning they're holding you, or are you is it like a 10 episode series? Or
I should know that, but I don't. It's a mini series. I think that they don't exactly know their schedule, so they decided to book me for the whole time. And it's, honestly, there's a little mystery here because I read the book and my character, he goes to Canada, like, you know, on page 39 or something, but they might be doing something different with me. And it sounds like they are. So maybe I'm more involved in this than the character was in the book. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But I think I may have just benefited from the fact that they wanted to be able to schedule me at will. It's so funny to hear myself talk about this, like, oh yes, like it's normal, but it's, you know, employment as an actor is abnormal.
It's incredible.
It's an incredible thing. I just, you know, I don't feel any entitlement, nor do I take anything for granted, you know?
All right. So Michael, here's another question. I have noticed that the more popular that my podcast gets, and the more roles I book, I have more and more people coming to me for advice. I have this podcast that is all advice. I mean, it's all the stuff that I've learned, and anyone can go and listen to that for free and so on. But I have a lot of people who want to come to me and talk to me on the phone, or they want to take me out for coffee. And that's totally fine. I utilized that when I was starting, and I really appreciate the people who did that for me. And I've done many dozens of them over the years and still do them. I'm getting to the point where I just don't have time. I just cannot fulfill those offers as much as I could. You must get those a lot. You must get people wanting to pick your brain, take you out to coffee, I'm assuming. And I'm just wondering, is that true? Do you have that? And do you accept them? And if so, why? And how do you say no if you say no? Again, another like 7-part question, as you're used to.
It happens with me less than you might expect, for an interesting reason. I think some people feel like, well, I don't want to bother him. He's this working actor, you know, maybe. I also think that a lot of actors are not of the mindset of, I'm going to take things in hand. I'm going to learn what I can learn. I'm going to go meet with experts, right? I almost always say yes for a couple of reasons. One is I love mentoring. Two is it's part of our tradition. And three, being characteristically frank, as I always am, it makes me feel legitimate. You know, I find that I have a great insecurity about feeling legitimate. And frankly, what people don't know is I have long stretches where I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do with my day? And I get depressed. I don't leave the house because I'm like, I don't have any place to be today. You know, my life is not like what people would imagine it. Right now, I'm swamped. I got so much going on because I'm about to direct a play. I'm working on my, blah, blah, blah. But it's not a bother for me. I enjoy it so much. Mm-hmm. I enjoy feeling like going, wow, I know some stuff. So the ones that I say no to are a couple of categories. I'm not interested in meeting with people who either have never acted before and are just brand new starting out. That's just too many questions for me. Or are not really doing the profession, but are sort of waiting around in the pool. And I really now, I really have a high radar for what my wife calls collectors. People who just want to meet me because I'm on TV. And that's creepy to me. It's really creepy. That gets a little like, then there's a follow-up call. When can we get together again? And blah, blah, blah. And it becomes like they want to be able to say, I'm friends with that guy on TV.
Yes.
So it's a new, not new now, but it's another category for me that I am a little wary of because it's not a real connection. You don't sit and have a real conversation. It's sort of like a little weird.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've been experiencing that more and more too. And you just kind of want to go like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I'm just me.
Or sometimes people will say, I really want your advice. I'd love to be able to like pick your brain or whatever. And I do it. Then they start asking me to do other stuff. And that's all fine and great and everything. But I kind of want to just be like, I didn't realize what you were asking me the first time.
Right.
I thought you wanted my advice. And I told you everything I could tell you. I don't really know why you want to take me to coffee again and again and again.
Right, right. Like, so I've found that some people want it to be like an ongoing regular thing, and I'm not really available for that. I do enjoy these meetings. And, you know, in many cases, okay, for example, I've directed at this particular theater several times, and there are always apprentices and interns and stuff. Some of them, I get really genuinely excited about their talent. I'm really excited to meet with them and see what I can do to help. It's a privilege. And I think of it as a responsibility in a way in our profession. And I enjoy it. You know, I like coffee. If I can do it, I say yes, but I have a very good creep meter. Like, I shouldn't say creep, but you know what I mean? Like if something's weird, I can mm-hmm. sense that. And it's the same with coaching. You know, I mean, I have people come to my apartment for coaching. You know, some of them have taken my auditions like 101 class, and I could sort of go, oh, okay, this person I can tell is not an actor and doesn't know it yet. For example, there are a couple of people that fall into that category, but I sent them elsewhere.
Can you talk more about that? What do you mean they're not an actor and they don't know it yet?
Maybe this sounds presumptuous. I feel like I can sometimes tell if somebody, sometimes by the questions they ask in class, I can tell that they're non-actors. Thinking of one particular guy, I won't say who brought up several times that I was on The Wire, like during this class that didn't have anything to do with my career. And I kind of just got a vibe that he was there just because of that. But certainly in classes where I teach and we do scene work of any kind, I think there are sometimes non-actors in those classes.
So what are they?
People who want to be actors or think they're, but I feel uncomfortable talking about this because it's not my place to say, you know. I also don't want anybody to, here's why I'm hesitant about this. There are a lot of actors, we have such low self-esteem. They're like, oh, he's probably talking about me. I'm not very good. And it's, if you've got the calling and you really think it's your thing, I'm not saying that. But there are some people who are kind of dabbling or, I don't know. You've asked me a hard question.
I definitely run into a lot of people who they don't want to be actors. They want to be famous and they're not interested in doing any work.
I think I'm not talking about that. I think okay. I'm talking about somebody who just doesn't have a base level of ability.
Okay.
Let me give you this analogy. There are very few people who can't be taught to sing. A lot of people think they can't sing, but I'm a singer. There are very few people who cannot be taught to sing. There is the very, very rare person who is truly tone deaf and doesn't hear rhythms, but very rare.
I'm not presuming that you're talking about the same thing, but we'll just take this as another topic. And I want to hear your thoughts on this. Something that I think about a lot, and I come across this a lot. I mentioned him earlier, Ron Marasco, brilliant guy. Wrote this great book, Notes to an Actor.
I love that book, by the way. I just have to say, I'm a big fan of that book. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Great
book. Yeah. He told me early on in this podcast that one of the most important things for an actor to possess is a bulletproof shit detector when it comes to your own work, meaning that you can look at your own work and tell whether or not it's good. You can tell whether or not the acting is good.
I got to say, okay, now I'm a big fan of his, but I disagree on this point only because I have witnessed again and again the terrible self-criticism and low self-esteem that plagues our tribe. I think we don't know when we're good or not good. I feel like, I know personally there are times that I'm like, well, that was shit. And people are like, that was great. I don't trust that because I think we tend to be harsh.
Interesting. Yeah. I have to disagree with you. I completely trust that. And the reason that I say this is because I see a lot of people who come to me and maybe they have an audition or something and they send it to me and they are really, really happy with it. They're really happy with it. And I'm just like, oh no, you can't see it. You can't tell.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing if somebody goes, I know that this needs a lot of work. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know what I can do to make this better. But if somebody thinks something is so good,
yeah.
I just go, oh, shit.
I guess it's not our job to tell people you should be in another profession. It's not appropriate, but I wish I could sometimes because I want to save people their time. But I just have to emphasize, this is a very small group of people.
Yeah.
We were just talking about who I would go to coffee with and who I wouldn't. It's my coffee. It's my time. So if I think this person is just absolutely not, you know, this is either doesn't have the drive or the passion or the commitment, or it really doesn't have the talent, then that's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I just want to circle back. I often say yes. I usually say yes because I enjoy those conversations immensely.
You mentioned something earlier that I want to go back to. You have bi-coastal representation. Are you self-taping a lot for stuff?
A fair amount, yeah.
You doing that in your place?
Yes. Again, this is another place where I have to say, I don't think anybody should listen to me because I'm not the expert. I tend to go low tech. I do it in my apartment. I don't have sophisticated lighting. Maybe the lighting isn't even good enough. I don't know. I just slap them on tape and do them. I don't think a lot about them.
So are you flying for callbacks or how does that work?
I am not taping for a lot of LA jobs because they have more than enough actors there. And I think I have yet to fly out to LA. I mean, I have not recently flown out to LA for a callback, either because I didn't get one or, I mean, I was there for a few months this last year. Yeah, I mean, I put myself on tape a fair amount. I mean, when I was in LA, I put myself on tape for New York. I just don't think I fly out. I think I'm at a level, I believe this is right, where I tape and either get or don't get the job.
Mm.
That's what it is. I think my audition is probably going from the casting director to the producers and it's a yes or no, or just not going forward. I think that's probably right.
On this same topic, are you considered a name actor?
No.
Okay. Can you explain what a name actor is?
Yes. It's really simple. You say the name, do a lot of people know who that is, right? So people recognize me on the street and usually are like, you're an actor. What do I know you from? But nobody goes, hey, that's Michael Kostroff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So unless they, you know, Google it at their table and then come over and say, Mr. Kostroff, you know, but I'm not a name actor. The other thing that makes somebody a name actor, I think, is does their name sell a project? Does their name sell tickets? Mine does not. Somebody might go, oh, if they put the picture up, they're like, oh, that guy from The Wire, and three people might buy tickets. Yeah, I think it's very simple. I think when you say the name Michael Kostroff, nobody outside of our profession knows who that is.
One of the reasons I'm asking is because sometimes in auditions, you are auditioning for a role where it'll say in the breakdown of what you're going to audition for, preferably a name or preferably a name actor.
Yeah, that's not me. And I think the agent is really equipped to make that call more than any of us. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. On rare occasions, I've been in the position of being the like default if you can't get a name kind of guy. You know, I did a couple of interviews for Obama campaign. I was like, you know, their D-list, you know, surrogate. I love doing it. You know, they were Wire fans, so people kind of knew who I was, but not on name, not on name.
All right. So we're coming up on an hour here. So Michael, I want to ask you, and here's another multi-part question. When it comes to the business strategy side of this industry, is there anything that you can think of or multiple things that you wish you had known earlier, or something that you figured out along the way? And maybe 10 years ago, you were like, you tried something, you're like, oh, that works. Okay. That, and then you put it in your arsenal and it's like something that you do.
I'll say what comes to mind and then we'll see if there's more. Realistic assessment of where you are in your career is vital to your career health. So there's a danger in thinking you are more established than you are and less established than you are. So we always have to stay. It's an ongoing process. It's not a static status. We have to keep checking in on that. So looks like this. When you're at the beginning of your career, if you're saying, well, I'm not going to have a day job because it's going to be a matter of weeks until I start, you know, starring in my own TV show, that's going to hurt your career health. Or saying, well, I don't want to do this. This doesn't pay any money. That's going to hurt your career health. The other side of that is, okay, I've now done a dozen co-stars. I don't need to do any more student films, maybe. Maybe I don't feel that I need to do any more acting for free. Or I've heard people say, I'm at a point now where I think I don't want to play any more characters that don't have names. But you have to do that very circumspectly and realistically and keep checking in with that. Second thing I really wish I had known, and it sort of connects with this, is for many, many years, I made sure to be in town for pilot season. I was not at a place in my career where I was going to get seen for pilots. I also didn't have the representation to get seen for pilots. Some years I didn't have any representation, and I thought there was some magic thing where I'd be walking down the street and somebody would cast me in a pilot. And you really have to be very realistic about this. I actually turned down paid work as an actor to stay in town for pilot season on many occasions. And now I look back and that was really foolish, really foolish. I wasn't going to get seen for any pilots. At this point in my career, I still don't get seen for a lot of pilots, partially because I'm a character actor. And also I'm not a name. So I think those two things in terms of strategy are really important. And I'll add one more thing. I feel that if you think of it as a pie chart of the things that are important to your career strategy, I think there should be a slice for artistic fulfillment. I think sometimes you get to do the thing that doesn't make sense strategically, but you love as an artist. I think that's like taking your vitamins and having a balanced meal. You know, there are things that I go, okay, well, I know it's episodic season and I know I booked work during episodic season, but I really love this play and I want to do it. And now I'm trying to sort of massage that back into my planning, because it doesn't have to be this cold, hard, ambitious, you know, self-denial life. I think sometimes you got to take things because you love doing them.
Yeah. Specifically, when you're talking about being seen for pilots, do you mean any role, or are you talking about like the big roles, like recurring or series regular?
I'm talking about series regulars. Because when we talk about pilot season, that's when they're casting the main characters. There might be some guest stars on the pilot, but we're really talking about booking a series.
Gotcha.
And there's this great mythology about pilot season. First of all, pilot season isn't pilot season anymore. Pilots happen all around the calendar, although there's still a concentration of them at a certain time of year. But we're not getting seen for those. We're not in that pool, you know, assuming many of us listening to your podcast are not in that pool. I know people who are, that tend to be of a certain young age and really, really good looking, but also if you don't have a resume and you don't have an agent, you don't need to worry about pilot season at all. Take it off your list of things to worry about and pursue other things that you have access to. Mm-hmm.
This is a question that I don't know if you don't want to answer it. Totally understand. You started acting before the invention of social media. And now there's a lot of talk about people saying that the amount of followers you have on social media impacts whether or not you get a role, or, you know, they're looking at the person who has the most followers and booking that person. I don't really think about that much. I don't really care about that much, but you are relatively outspoken when it comes to social media. Do you ever worry, how do you think about that? Do you worry that being on one side or the other politically could affect your chances of being hired for a job in the future?
Again, multiple answers to this. I was teaching in Vancouver this last weekend, and a casting director was asked about, it was a big all-day thing, and they asked about the social media thing. And she said, you know, this is really only something that applies to our series leads. You know, if it comes down to the stars of the show, we might be concerned about that. But a guest star for an episode, we're not going to be concerned about how many followers they have. As to your second question, you know, some people would say I'm reckless. I guess I'm not aware of how outspoken I am because I never think anybody's listening to what I say. I'm just, you know, I'm not aware of how public I might be. But the truth is that it's more of a danger if your beliefs are on the right side of politics. If you're a right winger, if you're conservative, I think it might be off-putting to people if you're particularly religious. And by the way, I am not vilifying either of those things because I don't believe in dismissing an entire group for their beliefs at all. I'm passionate about that. So don't misunderstand this. I just think there might be some small-minded people who are like, well, we don't want to work with any, you know, any conservatives or any, you know, religious people. And it's too bad, but that might be true. I think my friends who are Republicans might say that, might agree with that statement. I don't think being a vocal left-winger hurts you in our business. But everybody's got to do what they do. I tend to be a little militant in terms of going, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if it loses me a part. I don't care what people think. I'm not going to be quiet about certain things.
Right.
I think I tend to be a little bit like, for some reason, I think of Stringer Bell and The Wire when he finally is going to get shot. He says something like, bring it, motherfucker. You know, it's like, yeah, maybe to my own detriment. I don't really know. Maybe I would have been starring in my own television show by now. I have no idea. So,
all right, Michael, before we end, I
don't want to end. I love this.
Well, first of all, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
I want to add something also. I need to say thanks to your listeners because they give us such good feedback. And I love that they like when I'm on your podcast and I like being here, and I love talking to them. And, you know, I'm really glad that some of the stuff helps and lands.
Yeah, they love you. Is there anything that you want to talk about? Do you have any workshops coming up, or are you just too damn busy?
I have to take a break from workshops at the moment. I just did a great weekend in Vancouver. I'm trying to plan. I'll probably be back in Atlanta. I'll probably be going to Toronto. But if anybody's interested in my workshops, they should go to auditionpsych101.com. Get on the mailing list. I keep a different mailing list for every city, so I would let you know when the class is coming. And also there's a Facebook group now for Audition Psych 101 that anybody can join. I don't want to forget this. I've been doing these weekly videos that people really like. They're like these little short 5-minute videos on like the minuscule elements of the audition process. You can subscribe to those on the same website. It's a different mailing list, so you want to subscribe to that and get on the mailing list for classes. Yeah, the book is out. I think that's all.
All right, so before we end, let's end it with this. I don't know when the last time I talked to you was. Maybe sometime last year. So let's say a year has passed. What is something that you'd like to tell the listening audience that you've learned in the past year?
Okay, in the last year, and I think I'm still in the process of this, you know, we tend to put ourselves in this subservient position in our own careers, and we live in fear of our agents and the casting directors and offending and doing something wrong. And I'm trying to really reestablish myself as the driver of my own career. And what I mean by that is I often think, well, will my agent get mad at me if I want to go do this play or if I'm not available because I'm going to visit somebody? I'm trying to really calm that down out of the equation and say, I am choosing to do this. Some of the things I accept my agent might not like, you know, or I might decide I really need to go out of town and see a friend. And that's life, and that's okay.
If you like this podcast, please go to your podcast app, scroll down, and give me a rating or a review. Thank you for listening.